There's a tune that's in our gray hymnal that's quite long if you use all the verses. It's not my favorite, but the last part goes like this. I'm going to sing it even though today I'm having a hard time even speaking. But you might recognize this tune, this hymn. It goes like this. And we believe in life and in the strength of love. And we have found a joy. I'm not going up that high because I can't hardly talk. Joy being together and in our search for peace. Maybe we'll finally see even to question truly is an answer. You probably love that hymn, right? In my hymnal, I put a big X over it. So you can sing it when I'm not here. But I will say, you say, what's up, Katie? But friends and colleagues have no doubt influenced my opinion. One, a poet, colleague poet, who once complained over the language of the whole hymn, and in particular that last line, whether questioning really is an answer to searching for peace. Yet as I've been thinking about what we mean when our leadership decides to ask an open question, the song, it starts coming into my head and beginning to make a little bit more sense to me. It begins to make sense in our way in religion, where truth continues to be revealed, where we affirm and promote a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And maybe I'm good to remember that as a lifelong UU, I could be more sensitive to the importance of the ability to question. When I have heard, and I have in private times from many of you who came from a tradition where when growing up, when asking developmentally appropriate questions of religion, the response received was to be shut down. So somebody here has had that happen. Questioning in some religious traditions is not always welcomed. And I have heard from so many who have felt finally at home at a place that says yes to questions. And in our congregation, affiliated with a larger association of congregations, we call it the UUA, but independent, we make decisions right here. The association offers us services, but doesn't tell us what to do. We elect a board of trustees, we call our minister, we vote to approve the budget. And we help advance our congregation to determine the mission, the vision, and the work that lies ahead. Congregational consultant Dan Hotchkiss explains it this way. He says, the board begins to move its meetings to a rich diet of discernment work, communal learning, and reflection on the open questions that sit just past the horizon. And Mary Oliver isn't the only one asking questions. Poet Pablo Neruda suggests the same thing. He names it the Book of Questions. Tell me, he says, is the rose naked or is that her only dress? Why do trees conceal the splendor of their roots? Who hears the regrets of the thieving automobile? Is there anything in the world sadder than a train standing in the rain? Like the poets, the Board of Trustees discerns a question to be brought to you, the members and friends of the congregation. What question might we ask to lend itself to thoughtful consideration, to deeper, longer conversation than a simply a question that with a yes-no answer, or a question that only has one answer, or it's a question that is clear that someone else has the answers? How might we be enriched by asking a question together? Well, we're new at this. We've not done this before. We've not attempted it or tried it. The Board of Trustees of this congregation has decided to offer just one question to the entire congregation to address this year as we practice this. And since the time we formulated the question for all, our board has had some changes. In the December issue of our newsletter, the same one that had the before and after picture of the chancel, and it just dropped into your inbox on Friday. If you don't get it, you can sign up on the website to receive it. It was announced in our newsletter that our board president, Tom McCampbell, has resigned due to health concerns. And Tom's doctors have reassured him that he's doing okay as long as he slows the pace that he had been keeping. So we respect his resignation. Our board then at the meeting last week has appointed our vice president, Frank Lockwood, to step up to the role of president. So please, when you see him, thank Tom McCampbell for his service, and please welcome Frank Lockwood. And you can do that now. Where is Frank? Somewhere here. Right there. Yay. Also, our current treasurer, Mark Swanson, will be stepping down from that role at the end of December. The board is recruiting a new person to take on that position, as well as contracting out some of the cumbersome duties. Let's thank Mark, and he's back there. So as you might imagine, the board is busy sorting out roles, making changes to some procedures and policies, working on ways to lift up the importance of stewardship to support this growing and changing congregation. Nevertheless, as we finish 2019 and make ourselves ready to begin 2020, a new decade, a question you might ask, that's the title of Mary Oliver's poem, could be good for us to begin to think about. So here it is. The question we're asking for our congregational consideration is this. How might we develop a stronger sense of community? How might we develop a stronger sense of community? The question is intentionally broad and open-ended. The question does not define what we mean by community, or whether we are already strong or not, or who is the we named in the question. We might approach it like the new meditation program I've been using, where I have been urged not to problem solve as my first response, but to simply be with what is. The board also has generated a vision of ministry for this year. And the vision of ministry is to explore many ways of inviting intimate circles. And that directs the minister to work with the various areas of ministry, including staff and volunteers, and to find more ways to deepen our relationships with each other, building small groups, creating more meaningful meetings, and finding ways that as we grow, we can still remain connected. It seems to make sense to me that inviting intimate circles and asking a question about how we strengthen the community, it seems to me those two things go together. And it seems to me that as we approach the December theme of awe, which we will be doing this whole month, we might hear our question of developing a stronger sense of community as the kind where natural miracles occur that take us to a sense of awe and wonder. In a time of darkness, may we begin to see more clearly? And so I will invite you to do that here and now. Could you create groups of three or four to begin to ask the question, how might we develop a stronger sense of community? And before you problem solve with ministry programs, could you start maybe by asking more questions that this one might raise for you? Reminding us that this is the larger mission work of our congregation, it is suggested that we plan for a year's worth of board conversation without expecting answers soon. Right? But that's kind of hard work too, isn't it? Let's ponder a bit together. So I'll invite you to create your groups of three or four, and then will you go around in your little circle, allowing each person to first ask a new question that this one might raise for you? Do you remember what the question was? You want me to repeat it? Oh, somebody remembers it. How might we develop a stronger sense of community? All right? So make groups right now of three or four. I'm going to give you, try to make sure each person gets a chance to be heard, and then I'll ring the chime at the end. Sorry, you guys. Guess what? Tom is reminding me that we put pieces of paper so that somebody in your group will write it down on that little piece of paper. And the pencil is right in the chair racks in front. Okay? And shall we? All right, guess what? I'm going to interrupt you. Did you create more questions? Could you go around the circle again, this time attempting to answer the question, not with specific programs, but maybe with a feeling or a need or what else? A response to what answering this question might mean. In other words, you don't need to get specific. Don't need to have it figured out, but help develop this more. Do you want me to go get you coffee and bring it back? I know you need more time. I understand that you need more time, and yet, please come back. So were you able to capture a few of those on the cards? Tom can come by and pick them up. We're going to try to finish so that, and I'll tell you what else, since I can tell that you're still talking, come back here during the reflection and maybe we can get more expressed out loud. I want to thank you for your leadership, your participation. Did you notice that I thanked you for your leadership? Because by doing this, you become leaders in this fellowship. Thank you for your willingness, especially the people who came for the very first time. Brave, thank you. Your contribution to the mission of this fellowship. As the board considers your comments, as the board looks to tighten our mission, to set goals, to create a budget for next year's work. Tom, I think I'm going to have to finish doing that because you're going to do the offering. We will find more ways to listen to many voices, to realize the importance of asking questions to which we might take time to find the answers. I love you so. May it be. Blessed be. And amen. Good. So maybe we can start. Do you want to say something? And then... So you said you like the approach. What do you mean?
Yes, I'm not... I like the approach, the singular question.
So when we
if
had...
If I were on the board, I think that would feel like a decreased anxiety.
So in other words, having one question, not one guiding question, right? Frank, do you want to say something about
that? And even though the board will explore many different things throughout the year, to always be able to reflect upon all those things with the one guiding question just feels really nice. Mm-hmm.
Did you want to say something, Frank, about our new president, about how we got to this one question? So what before you do... What I left out, what I thought, is if I'm posing or bringing this question to the congregation, I didn't want to talk about it at all because then I'm already influencing what is the response, right? Which is why what I tried to do instead was talk about asking questions and what it means to ask open-ended questions. But anyway, well, how did we pick this?
Yes, and first of all, I wanted to say that I noticed that you did that. So thank you. That was a great job that way. And I turned to June right after you had spoken and said, that was really a great approach. Absolutely. No, it really was.
Thank you.
Because I remember what went into it. And, of course, I personally wanted a 4-part, 3-subpart question. And, of course, that got chopped down really quickly. And so it was an interesting process among the board at our retreat.
Yeah.
Mostly at our retreat and then even at a board meeting or maybe deep chair after the board meeting, to even shave it down a little bit more so that it was consistent with exactly what you just said. It gave the congregation basically full flexibility to decide, you know, where they wanted to go or even what the question meant to them.
Right.
And so when I met with the three other people, as you suggested, right off the bat, someone else interpreted the question way differently than I had thought about it. And I thought, okay, this is good.
Yeah.
You know, it's one aspect of interpreting what community means. And community certainly means different things to lots of different people. So that's good. It's a great start for that. Mm-hmm. Now, where we go from here is something we're going to have to seriously plan on. Because, mm-hmm. as you know, we don't have any particular plans at this point in time.
Yes. So did you all hear Frank?
Yeah.
Say that last part again.
Yeah, where the board wants to go or the congregation wants to go and pushes the board is certainly an alternative. Mm-hmm. We don't know yet on it, but I'm curious to see all those pieces of paper. Mm-hmm. I'll bet you there's a lot of them. I mean, there's a lot of thinking people in this congregation, lots of people with lots of opinions, mm-hmm. and I can't wait to read them.
Yeah, I will hand them to you in a bit.
First of all, hello?
Yep.
First of all, I think it's a great idea not to discuss question here because I think you're right about that. Exactly right. This is what you call infinitely part, what do they call it? 3-part question. This is an infinite part question. And it's no such thing as a short answer essay question like this. I mean, this is a long answer essay question. But how do we answer it to you? How do we get the answers that we think we would like to formulate to the church? How do we do that?
One of the open questions.
Yes. Do you have a thought?
I write two pages on this, or three, or, well, I don't write anything, but something, I can get somebody to help me, but, so what do I do with it?
Well, so as you heard Frank respond, that the board doesn't quite know yet what it's going to do at this point with this question, And because we've had a lot of changes, some of the things that we originally thought we might do, now we're just not sure how much time we have. But it could be that the board meets, and I am ex officio member of the board, that we meet in between meetings at a time that's called deep chair. So it is for pondering and learning rather than making decisions and passing things. So it could be a good time to just explore, to look, to maybe have these questions all put on a big sheet and then see where do they tend to fall? Are they falling in a particular area? Right. And we'll look at those kind of themes. And then, and I think that simply now this question isn't just the board's. Now this question belongs to the entire congregation. So even just to be thinking about it and not trying to push the answer at this point, but to be thinking about it for the whole rest of the year, I think could be powerful.
Yeah, I would like to give just one little analogy. In law school and in bar exam questions, when you study a case and all the considerations the court made, and the professor asks you, or the exam question says, you know, what is the right answer? Those questions typically have about 18 parts in the answer. And what is the right answer? Did the judge rule correctly? Is 1 point out of 18. The other 17 is how you got there and how you thought all those aspects through. So I think that's what this process is. The answer at the end is not so much as important as the process. You know, you've heard it, right? The journey as opposed to the place. And so I think that's going to be the most important thing. I don't really care where we go, but it's good for everybody to be thinking and talking about it.
Couple of things. The first is it's an incredible question that the board came up with, and I think that it needs to be raised again and again and again with the congregation. There's no way we can sit with the same group with each time. I wish we could. We could, but
you mean like in your small group that you just created?
It would require 5 minutes of milling around.
Right.
But at any rate, as Frank brought out, there's a pre-question, which is what do you hear when you hear that? Mm-hmm. Way before, what do you think we should do? That should never have been part. I don't want to criticize, but that should never have been part of the process. The second question then would be, okay, here's what we heard last week in service when we all talked. 6 or 7 things came clear around the pre-question of what do you even mean by the word community and what drew you here? And then the next one is, you know, how do you create it? And then without intending to, the process turned into exactly what you didn't want, which is rushing through. And it's what happens in a 1-hour service. I'm sorry, but we can't do everything in a 1-hour service. And I think we need an hour and 15 to an hour and 20 minutes because community happens in connection. It happens in the spaces between what's said. You know, it's like in classical piano. It's the spaces between the notes that make the beauty of the music. Well, when we are hurrying, as we did in this little triad or quadrat, we can't come up with anything because then, A, it's only the extroverts who say things. B, it's only the people who can put things into words really fast. And it's the space between. So I would ask this question for the next 4, 6, 8 services and spend 10 minutes on it, on a tiny piece of the question, the first one being, what do we mean? When you hear community, what do you even mean by it? And then maybe come to a series of questions that are the subset of what you want. That's my suggestion. Mm-hmm. And it, to me, it leads to time. In a pressured society, in a pressured 1-hour service, it operates against community.
I'm not feeling super articulate, but I'm going to try anyway because I'm feeling a lot of gratitude for this community. And part of that gratitude is that we're all able to define and participate in the community in different ways at different times. I'm just sort of reflecting on my 6 years here and how I step forward and actively, extrovertedly participate, and how sometimes I step back. And I'm really grateful for the opportunity to be more introverted and absorb what the community provides when I'm not right in the middle of it, making things happen. I think an organizational psychologist or people who study church organization probably have vocabulary words I don't have. I would think of it as spirit, too, that we all contribute our pieces that are different at different times. And then there's a synergy. There is something greater than the sum of its parts that I'm feeling very grateful for.
Well, it might be a part of being a little bit dyslexic. Of when you're thinking of the question of creating community and bringing together and what of just going to the opposite, the antithesis of that, and saying, well, when are the times when you feel excluded and why? Mm-hmm. And how can you mess with that and turn that around? And why do our kids feel excluded, and how? What makes them feel left out? And what makes me, at the opposite end of the spectrum, kind of, I've had a few years on me here, what makes me feel excluded? When do I feel left out? Why? And what could be done about that? It kind of turns the question around and makes an answer more approachable, or we could work on that more, maybe.
To try to tie this back to something that Katie in the prayer talked about, what a community might be if we look at what organisms are there beyond people. Initially, when you think about community, you think about the people in your town or something like that. But there is much larger communities that exist too, as well as all the organisms that are out there. And ultimately, the whole earth itself has to be thought of as a community. Mm-hmm. To expand this out even more. Mm-hmm. So that's a part of the question, mm-hmm, in my mind as well, is the whole environment that we live in, as well as who each of us is and who we nurture and connect with as well.
Yeah. I see it way back in the back. Emily's got her. Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking a lot about this question of community. And for me, I'm a working parent, and I feel very, very busy a lot of the time. And for me, part of this question is, like, how do I show up in a community where I don't necessarily feel like I have a lot to give, but I still want to give, and I want to participate, and I want to show that I'm committed as well. And then I'm also feeling, like, very stretched. So I think there's an individual reflection piece to this community question that seems really important, as well as the how do we come together piece.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
Yeah, that actually came up in the small group that I was a part of, that very question.
Yeah.
The last couple of comments have made me think that possibly an inventory of the different types of, and I don't know the word here to use, but Emily just made me think of it. You've got parents of small children. We have married couples. We have many different age ranges. We have some elderly, we have some middle age, but if we had an inventory of the different types demographics, yeah, thank you. So we could look at myself as a single male, okay, and I sometimes look at you and I go, this is more of a, I have in the past, I'm not really affected by that, but a couple's environment, because churches tend to be that way a lot of times, and single people are sort of hit and miss as far as participation. And I don't feel that here because I found out, well, if I want to change it, then I have to step in and get involved, you know, and put myself out here. But that's not necessarily easy to do.
Yeah.
I'm fortunate I learned that and do it. But if we looked at each person and put them in a demographic, well, I don't like that, pigeonholing. Mm-hmm. I think I've made my point. I'm just rambling on at this point.
No, I think those are really good. I heard a lot of really good points in there, Bob. I like the idea also that if there might be a need that you, not just you, Bob, but that you have a felt need and you might be able to solve it. You know, talking to other people, say, hey, do you feel this need too? How can we make this happen? So that's another possibility.
Sure.
Sharon.
I just want to go back to the small groups, intimate small groups, because I know for me, every little intimate group I've been involved in, I feel more a part of the bigger group. So whether it's in the choir or whether it was in Bobby's writing class, there was just a few of us, but the sharing was so deep. Mm-hmm. And then it, you know, brings me a little bit further in. And so I just wanted to continue. I don't know how we can offer that on an ongoing basis, but certainly when there's small groups, it keeps the question dynamic, but people can step in and out as they feel comfortable. But I think that small group is really important.
So, Sherrod, how was it for you making a little group right in the middle of worship? Was it awkward or interesting?
No, for me it's interesting. I love small groups. I just love to hear what people have to say.
Yeah.
And I'll just segue from that right into Coffee and Connections.
Yes.
Which is, it's a group here in the church. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with it. And it's kind of promoted as geared toward new members and guests. But it's a wonderful little intimate time, second Sunday of the month, 9:15 in Bowman Hall. If you're looking to connect and just maybe haven't found that place where, you know, you had the right opportunity to ask the question you wanted to ask, you know, we have a lot of things if you'll look around, but that's just one because, you know, I get paid to do that. It's Coffee and Connections. It's the second Sunday of every month. It's 9:15 in Bowman Hall. Very low-key, very good food, lots of good company. It's not just for
you're thinking
for
that
anyone.
There's a first family breakfast that meets over in Columbine. That is for families with young children. This one is the second Sunday. It meets in Bowman Hall, and it's for.
It is open. I'll just be honest with you.
Yeah.
When I first came on staff here, when I went to my first fellowship time over in Bowman Hall, I was mortified. I'll just be honest with you. I mean, everyone knew everybody and everybody was just talking and it was, I wanted to be a part of that, but it was, if you're not involved and not, so that's where I kind of came up with the idea of Coffee and Connections. It's just a way to kind of get to know a few people in the congregation and make those connections and establish those bonds and form that community is kind of what I think. Mm-hmm.
Whose car?
Well, there you go.
Yeah. I see we only have 1 minute left, but I'm just thinking more along the lines of, like, what's seven layers deep with this question? And by definition, the word commune as a verb is share one's intimate thoughts or feelings with, especially on a spiritual level, or feel in close spiritual contact with. And so, you know, just another layer is like, what is spiritual? What is spirit? And how are we both connected to others, to the universe, to the earth, but also within ourselves on a spiritual level, you know, and what does that look like as far as the diverse theologies that exist here? And I'm sure you all have heard me say many times, I really prefer the phrase like-hearted to like-minded. I don't think we're like-minded. That's exactly why we're here. But I do think we're like-hearted. And so, again, just all the layers below this one seemingly simple question.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Hi, this is Richard.
One more.
One more. Yeah. I guess my brain has jumped all over the place around this question, but the one that continues that I focus on is to remind myself that this is a growing process, and it is not one that ends. Mm-hmm. That we will continue, at least I think we should, as I try to do in my own life, continue to ask the question and to seek the answer. And sometimes they come and sometimes they don't. But continue to do that and realize that there are ups and downs. And if we take it the attitude that, yeah, that's going to be okay for a while, and then it comes back around. So we keep asking the question. And remember, it's a growing kind of thing. Just as trees grow, we grow, families grow, and things change.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Seems like a great way to end, doesn't it?
I think just asking the question and keeping it alive, it's an ongoing ongoing process. So we've got a good start. Thank you to the board for raising the question. And
thanks to all of you for coming back in here.
Yeah.
Because it was also really fun over there, all that pie and stuff. But you came back. So that is wonderful. To me, it's like we're doing it, right? Thank you.